Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. According to UNESCO, roughly 40% of the world's indigenous languages are in danger of disappearing. Here in the U.S., according to some reports, roughly a third of American Indian languages once spoken have already been lost, and many more are in danger. And when the language is lost, an essential part of the culture also disappears. My guests today are artists and curators of American Indian contemporary art, Bobby Martin and co-curator Tony Tiger, who says when Native artists gather, they often talk about the importance of their tribal language to their practice. And that idea is the focal point for the new exhibit, Speak. Speak While You Can, which opens tomorrow evening at Living Arts of Tulsa. 27 Oklahoma artists from 13 indigenous cultures have come together using art in a variety of media, demonstrating in a variety of ways how their language is an essential part of their identity as Native people and as contemporary artists. My guests today are the co-curators of the exhibit and artists as well. Bobby Martin is a Muscogee Creek, Tony Tiger is a Muscogee, and Sac and Fox and Seminole. Speak While You Can opens on First Friday at Living Arts with an opening from 5 to 8, and then will be open for viewing on Thursdays and Fridays and by appointments other days, and you can call Living Arts to make an appointment. The exhibit continues on display through October 16th. Bobby Martin and Tony Tiger, thanks very much for joining us, gentlemen. Thanks so much. I'm looking forward to seeing this exhibit.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thanks for having us.
The story of the struggle to keep indigenous languages alive is a long story with a long, sordid past, as you both well know. Give us a sense of how this exhibition took shape to draw attention to this struggle, which is every passing day a more desperate struggle in many tribal groups.
So I came up with the concept for the exhibition by... So we show a little bit, you know, at some of the Native venues and some of the markets. And I love to talk to the artists and see what's being produced. And so just in conversation, you know, we talk about our communities. And it seems like indigenous language always came up in the conversation somehow. And whether we were talking about, you know, how connected we were to it and what was going on in their tribes and their tribal programs. And so I thought, you know, it would be a wonderful way to visually express, you know, what was going on within our indigenous communities through our art and thinking about, you know, our languages. And I think it's something that's really important right now is that sometimes, you know, museums, they have wonderful collections, but they really don't connect very well with our communities and really what's on our heart and mind.
It's almost a backwards-looking look, isn't it?
Sometimes, yes.
Yeah, and I think our hope for the show is that, yes, it's backwards-looking, and you're right about that it is a kind of a... It's an urgency here that we're trying to make people aware of. It's not something... I mean, it's been... A lot of these tribal languages have been on the edge of extinction for quite a while, but there's been a lot of really good work among a lot of tribes of Oklahoma, especially, to kind of counter that. But still, there's a definite urgency of trying to make people aware that, wow, the time's not on our side here. So I think Tony's idea is a really strong one to kind of put that idea out there.
Tony, from those conversations, how did those conversations lead to, okay, let's have a show that showcases our work that will bring attention to the issue of indigenous languages and keeping them alive?
So in the conversation, so I'm a curator, so I like to look at things and just think about, you know, why the artist would choose to create such a piece. And in doing that, you know, I could kind of look and see who was really serious about the content that they were including in their work. And then from there, I began a conversation and asked them certain types of questions about, you know, about language and what the work that they were doing, you know, why they were doing it. And a lot of times it did. The culture came up, the language came up. A lot of singing is also very important to the tribe. And so we still have a lot of singing within our tribal connections with language, and still like the churches, the Christian churches, There's still a lot of tribal singing. There's some preaching done. And then you also have your ceremonies. You have your dances where there's a lot of singing. And so right now, I think that's kind of the main bond is through our songs and storytelling. And so that's kind of really how I got it, started thinking about a concept for an exhibition. But just really looking at the artwork and seeing what direction they were going and how strong it was. You know, sometimes we artists, we can make things, to go over the sofa and, so we just want to sell it and we can make a few bucks and keep the fuel in the tank and paint on our canvas on our easels. But sometimes, there's artists who really think about what they're doing. And those are the artists that I like to connect with.
Bobby, how did you get involved with this? Was this something that you two of you spoke about a number of times before this exhibition sort of began to take shape? Or was this something you were brought in on, or what exactly?
Well, Tony and I have been good friends for quite a few years, and we've co-curated several exhibitions. We did a traveling exhibition that traveled the Southeast called Return from Exile that came through. It showed at AHA a few years ago and other venues. So we have a history of curating together. And so, he came to me with this idea and said, would I help him co-curate? And I've myself have used language in my own work for many years. I'm not fluent, unfortunately. There's a lot of stories in a lot of families where, it's a really sharp break in generational passing down of languages, and that happened in my family. But I think it's a desire of a lot of us Indigenous people that we want to kind of reclaim that, and that's kind of the work I've been doing in my own artwork. And so when he came to this with this idea, it's like, yeah, let's do this. And we started making a list of artists that we thought, sort of fit that description of really trying to preserve and to promote language through their visual, their artwork.
Now, for both of you, I just throw this out to both of you. Was this a matter of choosing works that represents the idea of speak while you can, the thematic material suggested with the exhibition, or was it a reach out to artists to create work that would speak to this?
It was really an opportunity for the individual artist to create something for the exhibition. So I was approached by Living Art last October, while I was in Tulsa showing some art, and they had seen the Altars of Reconciliation, another show that Bob and I have put together along with Aaron Shaw that is traveling around, and I believe will be at John Brown University this coming fall. And so Living Arts asked me if I would put together an exhibition and if I had time. And so I said, I think I can, because I had already kind of been thinking about this exhibition for a time. And so I began to think about, which artists, like Bob was mentioning, that would fit into this. And so there are some artists who already, incorporated some language into their pieces. But we gave opportunity to the artist to create something specifically for this exhibition. And then some of the art had already been made. But a good amount of it, I think, was created just for this exhibition.
What was the reaction from artists to the idea? I imagine if it comes up in conversation as much as it does at, exhibitions and festivals and markets and the like, that they jumped on it.
Oh, yes. They're very excited about it. And I think it's the idea of the resurgency of interest in our languages and in our cultures. And you've had to think about this. And so in my family, my grandfather was a fluent speaker. My dad was semi-fluent. He went to some of the boarding schools that encouraged him strongly not to speak his language. But you can't really just take it away from individuals if that's your primary language. And so I know that he and some of his friends still spoke the language. But he didn't pass it down to me. And I don't really understand why he did not do that. But I recall him listening to like the old reel to reels. He would take those, because I was born in L.A. in the mid '60s, and so he would be listening to songs. He'd be listening to hymns. He'd be listening to tribal preachers, speak. And so I was always kind of curious, and I would listen in and just see what he was listening to. And that's kind of how I kind of came into contact with the Muskogee language.
Right. And, you know, that's another facet of the story. The very fact you were born in Los Angeles was another way in which the powers that be at one point were trying to encourage the languages to die by separating people from their sort of cultural groups.
Yeah, that was part of that relocation program, wasn't it, in your family, Tony?
Yes, it was. And so there's some articles that go pretty deep into that to that conversation of government policy and you know, in the way that they went about it. You know, it was kind of pretty slick in some ways. You know, because you know, I'd always wanted to talk to my parents about why they would take their family to L.A. You know, but it was strategic, and so sometimes these families would get to this destination and they were promised jobs and some housing, and it didn't exist. And so they were just left there to fend for themselves in many cases. And so my family, when they were in L.A., you know, Native people were going to, or any culture is going to kind of meet up together with anybody else who's of like culture and language. And so our family ended up meeting at the Baptist Church in El Monte, California, and then the Indian Center there in L.A. And so there was a reconnection of culture there.
Well, tell us about how the artists in this show use language within their artwork to sort of exemplify the importance of language in their particular culture.
Well, I'll talk about one in particular, Roy Boney, who is Cherokee, lives in Tahlequah, who is an amazing artist, but he's also the manager of the, and I'll get the title wrong, but it's the Cherokee Language Program, and they have like immersion schools for the kids. And anyway, he's been working for years being able to get the Cherokee language into a commonly used format like it used to be. But anyway, he goes so far as to even title all his pieces in Cherokee using the syllabary, and uses the syllabary within the work. He uses Sequoia a lot. I mean, he's surrounded by language all the time, and so it certainly comes out in his art that he does, not only in the works themselves, but even in the descriptions of the work. And Tony can talk to more artists, but other artists are more about just integrating the language in some form into the piece. And in my case, you know, I use the language as a kind of a history lesson in some ways. You know, I use a lot of like Dawes rolls and other historic documents, but also use the tribal language. I use snippets of like an old hymn book that belonged to my granny. And in a way, for me, it's just to kind of remember that language and remember that I'm still a part of me that I want to remember, and I want to be able to hang on and in some way revive that that use. My personally, you know. So, but you might know other stories, Tony, about other artists.
There's some really fascinating pieces in the exhibition, and sometimes even trying to encourage artists to think beyond where they were thinking about some of their work. Like a good example would be Candesa Teehee, I'm not sure if she's fluent. She may be fluent in Cherokee.
She's pretty fluent, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. And so she'll be speaking on Friday evening. So giving some brief opening remarks at the opening. But she is a weaver, and she does a lot of weaving of belts. And bags, and so we had talked about including her into some of the shows that we've curated, and sometimes she was ready, sometimes she wasn't ready, and so I think this time I really encouraged her. I said, you should do something. I think you're ready to do something, and she came up with this piece. It's a hanging piece, and so she's woven Cherokee words and actually Cherokee phrases into this belt type length, and they lay horizontally hanging down, and each one has a phrase on how the Cherokee people are supposed to live, and she's used beads for the letters and for some outlining, which is very, very handsome. And so I hope you'll get to see that. Actually, it's the very first piece that you'll see as you enter the space.
Now, I know my guests today are Tony Tiger and Bobby Martin. They're the co-curators and they're participating artists in the exhibition Speak While You Can, which Living Arts is presenting, which will be one of the first exhibits where you can visit freely on Thursdays and Fridays. And, of course, it's open by appointment other times through October 16th and, of course, opens this weekend, featuring 28 indigenous Oklahoma artists incorporating language or the struggle to keep language or sometimes sort of iconic words. I know there's one piece that uses the turtle, and the turtle is a very important symbol in a lot of cultures. And in certain cases with the Cherokees, they're using portions of the syllabary and using other, I guess, iconic images to highlight the struggle to keep indigenous languages alive. Bobby, you sort of talked a little bit about your piece, but you don't look Indian. Again, this is a piece that you have in the forefront, a portrait, but within the work, there's all these found objects, I think, that you were talking about earlier, right?
Right, yeah. That's, in some ways, that's just a big self-portrait of what I've kind of felt about growing up and being. I grew up in Tahlequah, surrounded by, you know, Indians, surrounded by Native people, and not really knowing how significant that was until much later in life. The portrait is actually my mom, who was half on Muscogee Creek, and she talked often about how out of place she felt growing up, where she wasn't full blood, so she wasn't accepted by the Creek speakers, but she was too Indian to be accepted by the white kids. and so all the other bits and pieces that you mentioned are all parts of, you know, maps and Oklahoma license plates. And there's actually even a couple of my son's teeth embedded in the wax. So it's a very much a kind of a, and there's a lot of language that's, because that, for me, as I mentioned, that language has been a part of growing up, but I've felt disconnected from that because, like in Tony's case, you know, my parents, my mom didn't pass. She was much strongly discouraged from learning the language, and then ultimately then that link was broken when it got to my generation.
Right.
So I'm trying to find ways back into that, and a lot of times just using those bits and pieces of, you know, like physical objects that have the language in them were important for me.
And, of course, that the whole title of that is, you know, it's so politically charged, too.
Yeah. Yeah, and you still hear that occasionally, especially when I show my art or show in booth shows a lot of times, and they people, I don't hear quite as much anymore. I think people are getting a little more, you know, sensitive to that. But, you know, they would come and they would expecting a certain look,
right.
Not only look from what I look like, but what the art looks like. You know, they're expecting a very sort of stereotypical thing they're wanting, and then when it's not there, they say, well, but you don't look Indian. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think sometimes that's a common thing you hear in Oklahoma, especially from people from outside this area, that they expect the teepees and the, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Well, Tony, you also created work for this, a piece called Borders and Boundaries. And it, again, it also looks like it's using some found imagery as well as some really, really interesting, I guess it's design, if you will. Tell us a little bit about your piece.
Yeah, so that piece came from a series of works that I called the Grand Weaver series, and so it speaks about really the idea of intersection of time and place and individuals in one's life who leave an impact, and so for me it was my ancestors, and so there's a photograph of my grandfather sitting. And he's sitting, and he's actually translating the New Testament into the Muscogee language.
Oh.
And so he attended Bacone Indian University, is what it was titled then. And so he earned his high school degree in 1924. And he was an athlete and a very, very educated guy, you know, for that time period. And he had very nice penmanship. I remember that. But he ended up going to Florida. And he was involved with the church, and so he would go down and he would do translations of the Bible and the New Testament into the Muscogee language, and they were pockets of Seminoles who could speak or who could understand the Muskogee language. And so he would go down and he would work in the churches and get involved with whoever was interested in the Christian faith. And then there's my parents, and then there's myself actually running. And at that time, I lived on the Standing Rock Reservation in North Dakota, where they took Sitting Bull's people. And there's a photograph of one of the churches there in Florida. Mm. And then there's layers of stereograph design that speak to men and women in community, shoulder to shoulder. There's a small blue triangular shape. And then you have some large stencil designs of Seminole patchwork that are kind of layered through. And so it really speaks about the times that we are connected to time and place and language and culture. And for us, you know, it's all been an interesting narrative about where we pick this up. And so my story is very, I've had an interesting life to where my parents, they were fearless in their faith, but also in their willingness to go and experience and I guess do something really good for their children. And so they gave us all types of experience, being born in L.A., going to Standing Rock, coming back to Oklahoma, and then encouraging us to go and to study at university. So I've had a really very rich life.
It's both of them are very striking pieces, and of the examples I've seen, they're all really striking, and each are telling this story in a very, very different way, and some in photograph, some in painting, some in mixed media, if you will. So there's a variety of artistic expression involved in the show.
Oh, very much so, very much so.
Yeah, we were very pleased with the amount. Not just the amount and the quality of work, but like you mentioned, just the wide variety of different approaches that folks took. And a big part of it, of the show is too, is going to be, I forgot to mention this earlier, Roy Boney, who wrote the exhibition essay. But Roy wrote a beautiful essay to go along with the exhibition, and we were able to get, correct me, Tony, I think 5 different tribal translations. And working with the tribes themselves, a lot of tribes have their own language departments and language programs. And so we're going to not only have, you know, Roy's exhibition statement there, but also those translations of those multiple tribal translations on the wall, on put the vinyl letters on the wall, so there will be the actual languages will be as part of the show too.
My guests today are the co-curators of Living Art of Tulsa's exhibit, Speak While You Can, featuring 28 indigenous artists from Oklahoma, which will be on display through October 16th. My guests today are both the co-curators and participating artists, Bobby Martin, who is Muskogee Creek, and Tony Tiger, who is Muskogee Creek Seminole and Sac Fox, if I understand. You know, when I was looking at the list of tribal groups that are participating and artists from tribal groups, you can see some where the language is in really, you know, very good shape. The Dene Nation, the Cherokee Nation is in better shape than most, Muskogee Creek. But some, like when I think of things like the Southern Cheyenne, some of the Western tribes like Kiowa tribe, I don't know how good the shape is. I know from the past that some of the tribes are, you know, they're on the verge of losing their language. You know, we're talking a few elders and you know, just this desperate effort to transfer their speaking skills to maybe not the next generation, but 2 generations down, because they're in that sense of dire straits.
Yeah, so the written language of many of these tribes does not exist. And so the tribes that you mentioned, the Cherokee, the Muskogee, and the Chickasaw, and probably the Choctaw, their languages are pretty much established in written form, and so you mentioned those tribes that their languages are not, and so they're still just verbal languages that they're trying to teach, and it's very hard to do that, and you have to have willing participants, you know, that would want to speak and learn, and so it makes it very hard. And so that's why we wanted to have a diverse group of artists have the opportunity to speak about their tribal languages. And so, like Antonio Belindo is the Kiowa artist, and so she and I had some conversations about their language. And like you said, it's not in great shape. And then also Michael Elizondo Jr. Is a Southern Cheyenne and Arapaho language teacher. And so he's in the process of learning and learning how to write. And so I encouraged him to, and actually he was one of the first artists that I talked to this about this exhibition. And so he's very excited about what he could bring to it, and also to inspire really the next generation and the generation after that of speakers. And that's really what the show is really about. It's an imperative for our tribal people to really recognize the importance of speaking their own language, learning it, and then also sharing it with the next generation. And so really that's kind of at the heart of what this exhibition is about.
And I understand that in addition to the essay being printed in a number of languages, there'll be an audio component as well.
Yeah, as much as possible, they're getting some of the artists themselves, and then other audio snippets that can be accessed. Like I think they're going to put QR codes through the gallery on labels and things like that, so people can then in the gallery access these audio files of people speaking the languages, which I think is great to be able to hear those actual languages while you're looking at the art.
All right. Well, it sounds like it's a really interesting exhibit, and it sounds like you had no shortage of artists that wanted to participate on this particular theme.
Well, I think one thing that Tony mentioned that I just thought of that while he was talking about it is, you know, curators a lot of times want to put shows together to enlighten the public, the general public, and that's something that we want to do with this show. But I think as much as anything, it's also about talking about and enlightening our own people about how critical some of these attempts are at making these languages survive these generations. And so I think in some ways this show is as much speaking to our own fellow tribal members as it is the general public.
All right. Well, hope a lot of people come out. When this is the first time you can actually come out to Living Arts, really since the pandemic began, where it'll be open Thursday and Fridays, and you can make appointments other days to view this exhibit, Speak While You Can, which opens with the first Friday opening at 5 at Living Arts of Tulsa. Tony and Bobby, thanks very much for joining us.
A pleasure.
All right, thank you.
Tony Tiger and Bobby Martin are the co-curators and participating artists in Living Arts of Tulsa's Speak While You Can, which features 27 indigenous artists in Oklahoma, and it's on display through October 16th at the gallery. The gallery is open Thursdays and Fridays and opens with the first Friday opening, this Friday from 5 to 8. It's open by appointment at other times, and you can call 918-585-1234 for appointment information. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.